Welcome to Grumpy Old Geeks, a weekly podcast where two old internet vets talk about technology, the internet, where it's going to shit, and what we do to fix it. I'm Jason.
And I'm Brian.
You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/grumpyoldgeeks, on Twitter at GOGpodcast, or on the web at grumpyoldgeeks.com.
Or you can email us at podcast@grumpyoldgeeks.com, and now you can also subscribe to us on iTunes. Just search for Grumpy Old Geeks.
If I keep it recording all the time, I have to spend hours editing.
Oh.
See, we just did the hot intro.
The hot intro. What's up,
Come
Brian?
Come in hot, bitches.
What's up, Brian? Number six.
Number six.
So I want to start this episode with a definite mention that this is not a paid advertisement. Because everybody who listens to podcasts knows that Squarespace is the place to get your website with no whatever. But we use Squarespace for our website.
Mm-hmm.
Because
that'd be grumpyoldgeeks.com.
That would be grumpyoldgeeks.com is a Squarespace website. Because
I was just doing an Ariana Huffington and pimping it at every opportunity.
Oh, thank you, darling.
Yeah,
thank
no problem, much. Darling.
So I tried it out because I listened to Merlin and Dan on all of their shows talk about it and talk about it. I'm like, okay, well, let's see if this, you know, see if this is all it's meant to be. And I had a problem.
What problem did you have, Jason?
I followed their instructions on setting up a podcast. And what I did was I submitted the Squarespace RSS URL to iTunes mm-hmm. for our show.
Yes.
And was hopeful that their statistics package would be up to snuff to give us all of our readers and listeners and viewers. And it wasn't.
So we have no idea who's listening to us.
Kind of. I can infer. I can infer from the bits in the stream
yes.
how many people are listening to the show. But I cannot point to the numbers and tell an advertiser, oh, this is how many people listen to our show. So I went to go set up a FeedBurner URL. Because FeedBurner, while it's probably going to be taken out back and shot soon, because Google likes to do that, they've got great podcast statistics. Unless we know I go roll our own and do yeah. all of the tracking and all that stuff, and yeah. I just really don't have
Which,
it in me.
Considering this is a free project for us that's for fun,
yeah
we're not going to be doing that at the moment.
So there was a catch, and I needed to put a new tag in our RSS feed that said new feed, like iTunes colon new feed.
Right.
That lets iTunes know that, oh, the feed URL has changed. Well, Squarespace didn't support that.
Hmm.
And I went back and forth with their support for a week.
Right.
Educate as I went up the tiers. Because I got
oh,
you know,
I love
I got
that
the,
process.
Yeah, I got
Isn't
the first
that the
guy.
Best?
I got the first guy, and he was just like, oh, this is what you got to do. I'm like, no.
Usually when I call people now, I'm like, I don't need basic help. I actually know what I'm doing. Kick me up to the next level, please.
Send me to an engineer.
Yeah.
And it finally, after like literally six people, I got to the engineering team, or I got to my liaison to the engineering team. The engineers, they're like, just shut the fuck up. I'm talking to you. But my support guys, and it was a different person every time. That was the fun part.
Oh, isn't that wonderful?
But they did read the thread, and they were cognizant of what had happened.
Mm-hmm.
The engineers went and implemented the feature to put in a new RSS feed globally for everyone.
So you fixed Squarespace for everyone.
I did.
You are a hero, man.
So now, because the problem is, you can't, if you need to leave, or if you leave, you can jack it up yourself and figure it all out, but it's a pain. But if you do sign up, you follow their instructions, then you want a FeedBurner URL, or a different URL, like some other feed proxy, now you can do it. So all I got to say is kudos to Squarespace for amazing customer support and not just saying, oh, we can't do that.
Yeah, you know? That is beyond rare.
I know, because, I mean, yeah, they lose me as a customer. It's $20 a month. I mean, I'm not like a huge cash cow.
Hey, big spender.
Yeah, seriously. But man, I cannot believe they did that. So
that's amazing, and anybody should support any company that does that. Because
yeah.
No one does.
I'm
no
a
one
customer
does.
For life now. Yeah. I am totally a customer for life because mm-hmm. they did me right. And I just don't get that anymore. So.
I can't remember the last time a company did that for me.
Yeah.
At all. So, thanks.
Yes. And also thanks to the listeners because we hit number 13 on the top podcast list for technology. So thanks, guys.
Yeah.
Appreciate the ratings, the reviews.
It's nice. We like doing this anyways, but it's fantastic to know that people actually care. If you listen, please give us a rating, because that's the only way that anybody knows that anybody's listening to anything.
Yeah, so, tell your friends, you know. Yeah,
but give us a good rating. Don't give us a 2. Come on.
we spent enough on this just in gas to warrant more than a 2.
Come I
on.
Think so.
So, but thank you guys. I really appreciate it.
Yes.
So today is a banner day for us.
What are we doing?
We have our first guest.
Whoa.
Yes.
All right.
Soon, Rudy Jachon will be joining us of Galacticast fame and Comic Book Orange.
Yes.
And he actually did a, he was the director for a very short-lived iPhone game video series that I was actually on. I was one of the co-hosts.
Oh, really?
Yes, I was reviewing iPhone games.
We'll have to put that specific link in.
Well, I actually got a really good picture of him on set, and he looks like Superman. So, I think that's because he's wearing a Superman shirt. But
that helps.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So soon, Rudy will be joining us, and we're very excited.
Yes, it's going to be nice to have a guest, and hopefully all the tech will work out for that, because we haven't tested it yet.
Well, yes. So a little bit of follow-up. Mm-hmm. We were talking about security last week.
Yes, we were.
And this week, there was a giant problem with two very popular WordPress plugins. WordPress, or WP Supercache and W3 Total Cache.
Extremely popular plugins. I use some of them myself.
Well, you should go update, because about 6 million people have downloaded these plugins, and there are exploits in them that, unfortunately, were released to the public 3 weeks ago. That people knew about, so they've been exploited for 3 weeks. So, you might want to go get my personal favorite plugin. And here's the I'll tell you the rub on this in a second. The WordPress Exploit Scanner plugin does a great job of finding files that shouldn't be there,
right?
And plugins that have vulnerabilities, possible vulnerabilities. It's not 100% spot on, but it's really good. So WP Supercache the main person that wrote that is a guy named Donica.
Okay.
He is a main employee of Automattic, the company that makes WordPress. So he's a main WordPress engineer.
Gotcha. So
is Exploit Scanner. Same guy. So
okay.
Your mileage may vary. But I've used I had a
client. Well, that's the reality of the internet now, right? With all these things, it's they get ahead. You try to catch up. Yeah. They figure it out. You try to catch up. Yeah. So.
And I had a client this week who got totally owned and found a nice, juicy PHP basically shell admin tool on their site that had been there for a long time from an old exploit. So, guys, get Exploit Scanner. Check your stuff. Just poke around. Look to see if anything has been modified. And check your permissions on your files and your folders. And don't leave everything writable.
And it also touches back to a previous point that we made on a previous podcast as well. WordPress sucks.
WordPress doesn't suck. Plugins are the main
exploit. But you can't do anything with WordPress unless you use the plugins. Or write your own. But then that's not what... WordPress is meant to be the cheap and easy site. If we're writing our own plugins, then we're talking... Yeah. This is a $100,000 site again. As opposed to the $10,000 site.
I'm fine with going back to the $100,000 site days.
Oh, me too.
Yeah.
And I implore all of you to start realizing that WordPress, it will bite you in the ass. If you go cheap, you get what you pay for.
And on the flip side, just go hosted. You know, go WordPress hosted. Don't get a server and do your own thing, because most people who do that don't know what they're doing.
Yeah.
That's... We could talk like another episode about WordPress. We can see if Matt will come on and defend himself. Yeah. You know,
yeah, that'd be fun.
But like, I'm a fan of what they've done.
It's a beautiful concept.
Part. Yes.
Yes. Very it's a utopian. Beautiful concept.
It's utopian. Okay. So.
So also in touching back to something, we were really picking on Yahoo and trying to figure out what the hell they were going to do anymore. Big news today.
What's the news?
The news is that Yahoo snagged the exclusive rights to Saturday Night Live's archives starting in September. With a caveat that came out a little bit later in the day, being only clips, not full episodes. But they're moving in hardcore to the streaming video area, which they don't really do much in.
Yeah, I see.
Which is an interesting play.
I'm confused about that, them. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, granted, it's clips, and they don't have exclusive rights to the current season.
Yep.
But when you go back to old seasons, there were a lot of dog
Oh, there's a lot of crap.
Landshark.
I mean,
no, I like
Landshark. Landshark is great. What are you talking about? Landshark is one of the best.
Yeah. I like the Bass-O-Matic, you know, the Bass-O-Matic, all the old stuff. Yeah.
But it's an interesting play for them. I mean, when you already have Apple TV, you've got... you got Rokus, and Kindle TV has just been announced. So Amazon's moving in with their own set-box player.
Yay.
You know, it sucks that they can't all integrate. That's never going to happen. But seeing Yahoo move into that area, obviously impressive that they're doing something, but is that the smart play?
I don't know. I mean, I'm sure they're grasping at straws, but it's something.
It's something.
You know, they're trying.
It better than nothing.
So you got some more Kickstarter follow-up, too. So
speaking of something better than nothing... Oh, yeah, after my epic rant about Kickstarter and Amanda Palmer, and then the whole, because I never watched the show, Veronica Mars.
Oh, yeah, Veronica Mars.
Yeah, which really kind of, like, got my goat, the fact that a major studio is basically throwing stuff up for fans to invest in. We got another one. Big one announced today. Zach Braff is now doing his next movie on Kickstarter.
Who the hell is Zach Braff?
Zach Braff was the star of Scrubs for many ages, and then he did that movie Garden State, which notably featured Natalie Portman in her bra and panties in a swimming pool, which is the only thing I remember about that movie.
I saw that movie, and it was so unmemorable, I don't even remember that.
You know, he's kind of... He does cute, whimsical, hipstery things that chicks like.
Okay.
Yeah. So he's doing his movie now on Kickstarter, and I can see that he already has $1.659 million, $2 million total, only 23,000 backers, which is something that we'll talk about more as this shakes out a little bit more, because I've been reading some interesting articles talking about how few people actually fund these kind of major star projects, but it's big money. It's mm-hmm. it's rich fans.
That's what I'm thinking. Yeah.
So it's an interesting thing.
I'd be interested to see the applauded curve of where the money's coming from, because I'm sure it's a few super fans that are
basically are funding these things, and then we want to see where the rest of the money comes from, because there's no way this movie will be made for just the $2 million, as we were talking about with the Veronica Mars thing. Somebody else is going to step in as a distributor, going to kick in money. Blah, 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 blah.
And he's going to keep the profit.
Yeah, basically. Although we're looking at a picture of him with the word balls written on his forehead, which I find strangely appropriate right now.
That's on your chin.
Hi there.
Hi, Brian.
Hey, Jason.
I shouldn't turn and talk to you because we're...
Don't turn and talk. Talking to them.
We've got our first guest on Grumpy Old Geeks.
I'm the first guest.
Thank you for joining us, coming all the way from Santa Monica.
I know, the distant land of Santa Monica.
Satan Monica, as I like to call it.
I think, literally, I had to just lie on the floor right outside my workspace and push myself downhill and just did not have to stop to arrive at this wonderful studio. And let me say, it is a wonderful studio. I actually like this space immensely. I feel very creative here. I don't know why. Yes.
Thank you very much.
Yes, and for the listeners at home, we are actually in a kitchen, but it is a beautiful studio kitchen.
Nothing creative motivates me more than food. So, I mean, you're feeding me after this. That's what I've been assuming.
Well, there's some old holiday cookies I see over there.
Sold! Let's do it.
In true grumpy old geek fashion, there is an old piece of pizza.
And I've had one, so if I'm not dead by the end of the podcast, have at it.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah, so we wanted to have you on because you're not quite old as us. And you're not grumpy. You're actually an upbeat. Yeah, you're a totally upbeat dude. Great career in online media, doing web shows, but also a fucking rock star coder. So we thought we'd have you on and talk about some things that old grumpy geeks like us can learn from the young.
Complete lies in your intro, by the way. I'm a modest coder, but I love coding and I love online media. And the funny thing is you keep saying like old or grumpy. Grumpy old geeks. And the funny thing is, this last couple of years I've been feeling my age in terms of both coding and creative endeavors. But so I include myself in your club. I don't think I have anything to show you
Well, programming really is a young man's game. Like, once you get past your early 20s.
I disagree.
I disagree, too, but hires don't seem to agree.
Hires don't seem to agree right.
Lots of articles about that recently.
Yeah. I don't seem to agree with it right now. And sometimes I live in fear of, like, well, what if I have to go and look elsewhere for it? You know, I'm 35. I'm terrible with numbers. So I don't even know my own name. That's why a computer's figured things out for me.
What's that in hex?
Yeah, exactly. It's zero. But I have seen some of that ageism, and I think it's only because I blame everything on The Social Network, that movie.
Oh yeah.
Because everything we're seeing right now is because everyone's like, oh, The Social Network. I need to find some young 20-year-old and throw a bunch of money at him. And magically, this product will appear out of his ass. You know, that's what I'm seeing in some cases. But the reason I say statistically I disagree is so much of what's going on now is based on ideas that have been percolating, generating in the university for like since the beginning of the last century, right, for the most part.
Right.
And some of those old hats are still in the game because of that, like that foundation of it. So yeah, the hiring when it comes to, like, I guess us workmen coders, it may be a bit tougher, but I think at some point they're going to come around and realize, like, wait, most, and I'm going to say this outright, I believe that 98% of coders are shit. Yeah. And they're not good coders at all.
Yeah, they're terrible.
I know you're saying I'm a rock star. I believe I am nowhere near a rock star. I probably put myself in the 90 to 95% percentile, which still qualifies as shit in my opinion. So, you know, and it's, there's certain practices you can do to be better at it, but yeah. But
and that comes with experience, you know.
I think there's a code versus big picture thing that happens too, and mm-hmm. that comes with experience. When you understand the larger thing that's involved, as opposed to actually really knowing the code, cutting to the chase, figuring out things quicker, that comes with experience.
And that's wisdom. Yeah, that's what, like, when people say wisdom, it's like, that's really it. It's like, wisdom is not intelligence. Wisdom is, yeah, I tried that before.
Yeah.
Been there,
why don't you go ahead and try it too?
You've already done this five times with five different clients. Exactly. It doesn't work.
Yeah. And I think so. Yeah, that's really what it comes down. So what is a young man's game is the insane work hours and the...
Yes.
Yeah, that is the thing.
That I've been struggling with recently because mm-hmm. I started my own company 15 years ago. I was happy to work 40 hours. Because
it is yours.
All the time.
Right.
And now I want downtime. I want to spend time hanging out. I want to spend time with friends. I do not want to be on call 24/7 anymore.
Right.
But I also think that with age and wisdom comes the fact that we can do it faster than those kids. Those kids are figuring it out.
Yeah.
They're figuring out everything that we learned by doing those 20-hour work days.
Right.
And we've been there. We've done that. Okay. We know how to do it.
And, and also, some people say kids. I'm also lumping in people who are new to coding. I've encountered a few people who are like, they're just they've not been coding as long as I have.
Yeah.
And because, you know, everyone's Code Academy, yay! You know, let's all get into this.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, it's... Do you guys feel like a lot of the tutorials out there are like... And this is another age wisdom thing that, wow, tutorials are shit. They completely show you how to do something this way, and you realize at some point you dawn like, wow, the way I was taught was completely wrong.
Yeah. Tutorials tend to be sloppy now.
Yeah.
They're not impressive.
Right.
They don't do what they say they're even going to do half the time.
Right. And so this goes back to the energy thing, which is if you have a lot of energy, you have time to go like, this didn't work, let me figure it out. And you iterate on that like a hamster. Yeah.
Yes.
You know? And plus, like, and that's the young man's game aspect of it, of like, I have so much boundless energy. Lately, my mind's been, and I think this is, again, an ageism thing. Not ageism, it comes with age. You're like, what's minimal effort? What do I need to do to make minimal effort? Like,
Occam's razor.
Yeah, everything. Exactly.
Yeah.
It's like, why? I also love, and I think that's why I like a lot of the Ruby stuff. Some of the philosophies in there, like dry. Do not repeat yourself. That is awesome. Because it's like, yeah, why am I doing this like 10 billion times? It's stupid of me. Yagni. Have you guys ever heard that time?
I've heard of it, but I can't remember what it...
You are not going to need it. And I love that. I'm like, not gonna need it. So like that's when people are like, we need to optimize it and have it scale between this and that and blah blah. And like, no.
10,000 people are gonna look at this. We don't need it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I get that with clients with Facebook apps now. They're like, oh, we need multiple servers, we need multiple redundancy and all this stuff. And
I'd say you don't even need Facebook apps considering the way they keep restructuring their system. You can't even find those fucking things anymore.
Yeah, but they still pay for it, and they're still by popular. I mean, okay, 10,000 people the first day.
Right.
Next day, 2,000 people. Yeah. Next day, 50 people. It went,
what's the opposite of viral? It's doing that.
Yeah. Yeah. Entropy is what we call that. Severe Facebook entropy.
On day two, antibiotics hit. That's what we're trying to say. Yeah. That's the whole youth thing that I think that is happening.
Right.
And I'm saying this, like, we recently hired at my workplace, Carbon 5, an 18-year-old guy, smart as a whip, mm-hmm. and so full of energy. And it was like those things where you look at yourself, like, you're like, oh my God, I was him, you know, 20 years later.
Yeah.
And, you know, I took the term like a puppy programmer. That's why I saw in my head. He was like, what are we going to do today? Huh? Look what I did. And like, I'm going to try this and this. And then like, you know, you can't just yell at them and say, no, do this. You know, you do have to, like, because then you can't just yell. You have to train and
get in your cage.
Yeah. And set boundaries and at some point and talk them through stuff so that, in this case, this guy, Hugo, who's in our, San Francisco office. He's really smart, really cool, and he's learning. And that's the one thing I think is great. Like some people, he's actually learning, and you're like, this is great. I'm teaching you, and I can see that you are adapting those processes. And the good thing about it is sometimes he'll say something, and I'm like, you know, you think he'll say something. And you're like, no, wait, yes, very good. You know, like it's great working with a younger coder in that way.
Right.
And I hope most companies start realizing, like, you know, a mix might be a good thing in some fashion.
Yeah, there's a lot to be said for that. You got the energy, and then you also have the wisdom coming in and kind of putting a tap on it.
Right.
Just saying, all right.
Yeah. Exactly. Like,
let me redirect you this way.
And I think the one thing we have to, I do think that people, it goes back to the whole like 90% or 90% to 90% are shit, mm-hmm. is so one thing I think that came up out of our generation or maybe right before it, did you guys ever encounter coders who are like, well, I'm just a database coder, or I'm just a C# coder, or I'm just a Java coder.
The generalist.
That's the specialist versus the generalist.
The generalist.
Yeah, this is what we went through on our previous episode. It's do you know everything, or do you know just one thing?
And
So I get a lot of people that are like, no, I just do CSS.
Yeah,
I don't touch it. I don't know
HTML.
You and
I were both generalists growing up, because we had to be.
Yeah.
Because we started when there was nothing, mm-hmm. and we figured it all out as it came along. There's a lot more specialists now.
And see, that's the thing, is I feel like that is one thing the youth does have, which is because they're embracing this whole do everything, lean, you know, why do you need this? Why do you need all like so many people to for a company approach, at least with their own startups?
Mm.
They're becoming generalists. It's swinging the other way. And I've always been a generalist. You know, I never believed in the idea of like, oh, I'm a Java programmer. You know, in fact, when I first got hired in my first coding gig, I didn't know anything about Java. Right. It was literally like, for me, I was going to be a super smart game coder. That was my, I was like, I want to make computer games. And I literally remember the point where I threw up my hands and gave up, which is I just figured out how to do ray tracing Doom style. And literally the next day, Quake landed. I'm like, fuck this. And at the time, my father, I sort of had like a timeline of money because my family had moved to Ontario. We had been living in Montreal, Canada. I was going to McGill University.
I was getting the little bit of
the Canadian.
Yeah.
And basically my father was like, okay, well, here's the deal. You can move with us, but you and I both know that mean repeating like possibly 1 year of university. So instead of graduating in 1 year, I'd have to graduate in two.
Right.
And away from friends, new school, transfer credit, blah, 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 blah. Or I give you a whack of money. You figure out how to pay for the rest of it, and you're out on your ass. And he also added, like, and by the way, once you graduate, if you graduate while living with us, you're still out on your ass. You know, like, And so I was like, okay, I'll take the option of the money and live in Montreal. And of course, being an idiot, I spent a lot of that money partying. Like, I got an apartment in downtown Montreal, which I gotta say, some of the most beautiful women in the world.
It's an amazing city. Great music scene.
Yeah, first time without any parents. Festivals in summertime.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, I can't code quick. And I need to make money. And someone had a job posting for a Java web developer. And I was like, literally, well, they said like someone to make, it was like for a web company. And they're like, can you code? I'm like, sure. Came in like, can you code Java? Lying through my teeth.
Sure.
Totally. And they're like, can you
reading the book that night.
Yeah, well, that was exactly it. Because they said like, can you come in tomorrow and code a sample app? And I'm like, yeah. Went to the bookshop and got one of those in 24 hours.
Yeah, Java in 24 hours.
Yeah. And I was like, okay. And I went, oh, Java's totally like C++. Which I had also learned because of game coding and assembly and all that. And just applied those principles to it. And that's always been the case for me. And I've now, at Carbon 5, where I work, it's like I don't see myself as a Ruby coder, though I love Ruby. I don't see myself as a Java coder. I'm like, I'll take any language you throw at me and I'll embrace it. Like my last project there was with a client who had a Python API. Mm-hmm. And you know, some people were like, well, you know, should we transfer this to Ruby? I'm like, no, fuck it. Well, I'm not going to rewrite an API. I'll gladly learn Python. I'd never had a lick of Python.
Right.
And so I think that generalist attitude is something that is, as we grow older, there's a tendency to say, like, well, I know what I know. And it's like, as older coders, we should just go for it. Don't hesitate. And encourage others to do the same.
Right.
Because there lies the stagnation and the specialization, which I think is also blocking older coders from getting in.
Well, shit. I gotta dump PHP and learn another language.
Every language. All the languages.
Yeah, I know. And
no,
but do you find that it's easy to jump from language to language because you've learned so many of them? I mean, the concepts are fairly similar for every language.
I mean, look, it's reasons called computer science is there's fundamentals that work from language to language. And I do have strong opinions. Like, I don't like PHP. But my problems with PHP have nothing to do with, let's say, the language syntax. I just don't like the embeddedness of the code on the same page that generates the HTML.
Okay.
Which is not always in everything. I understand that. But that's where most things like that come my way. I'm like, ugh, that's how it is. And I also have, I feel like a bit of, like Perl nastiness. Is like, this freaking library is way too big and way doing too many things. That's, like my opinion on PHP.
Right.
But push comes to shove. I'm like, okay, well, I'll help you write your PHP app. There you go.
Okay.
You know, I think it's if you can apply your mind to it, you can totally do it. And yeah, the more languages you expose yourself to, you can quickly grok, you know, like what is the, like, oh, that's like, this is to that, like, this is to that. You know, like, I picked up Python within a couple of weeks because I noticed a lot of it between Ruby. And strangely, I was like, CoffeeScript, like a lot of stuff that happens in CoffeeScript and in the Node framework for JavaScript, I was like, oh, that's why they did that. The guy totally ripped it off from Python. So I worked my way backward. Like, that's the kind of things that you have. And that's the joy you take in learning new languages. If anyone's looking for a reason to, I'm like, you know, there's the joy when you make the connections of evolution and so forth.
So I think it works well for you because since you're at a shop that has different language needs all the time,
you can
jump between them. And
yeah, I mean, like, it's helped us. Well, like, I feel like all our coders have that strength because, you know, these days no one wants a website. What they want is a social framework with a mobile app that hooks into like some other system and plugins into WordPress and
connects to multiple APIs
exactly
all over the place. Yeah,
you know, and so like you gotta have that that skill. Mm-hmm. Or that ability, at least at where I work, to put on that multiple hats. And sometimes you might have a designer. More often than not, the client brings in their designer, and that person knows Photoshop, and it's like, you're the guy that's got to make it look like that as good as it is. Now, Carbon 5, one of the reasons I work there is that their philosophy too is though, like, they're like, you know what? There's a 40-hour work week. You're not gonna do the. You're not gonna stay late. If one of our guys is staying late, we talk about it. Like, why are you staying late? Some of the reasons you're staying late is like, well, I did crawl in at 11 a.m. Like, totally, you're doing your 40 hours. You know, if someone works a weekend. And that, like, it's almost like this soul searching has to take place before someone works a weekend. Because we're like, should we allow it? Should we encourage it? We insist, like, you know, no. You're going to take 2 days off in the coming week. it's the 40-hour thing, and it's we started that with our, it's not like rely on the young guys to do it and the old guys go off and do that. It's a lifestyle company, and that's one thing I do believe.
That's amazing.
That's great. Yeah.
And we tell our clients that, because we say, we also are like, one of our big things is honesty with the client. Like we say, raise the red flag early. This is not going to work. Yes, it will. No, I'm afraid it's not. You know, like, you can tell me till you're red in the face that it's going to work, but that's what you do to your employees, and that's why you're coming to us, to have people say, I'm not going to lie to you and say this is where you really are.
Right.
Or, you know, another phrase we use is come to Jesus. You know, like the real, like when our client, like we've already raised a red flag, they're kind of living still in denial post that, and then we have that come to Jesus moment where you're like, okay, now you're feeling it. Let's talk about what we really need to work on here, given the real priorities and the real budget and the real world. I strongly encourage grumpy old coders like ourselves we have to pass that down to the up and coming generations.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, this cycle that we've been through, which is like, gotta work late, gotta deliver, gotta do this, it's going to continue, and it's not good for the industry or for anybody.
It's not good for anybody. We're all shooting ourselves in the foot. Anytime any person says, oh, I'm going to stay up all night long to take care of this for you, and I'm going to do it for no extra cost,
right,
it hurts all of us.
All of us.
Yeah.
Either you're not the guy doing it, and everyone thinks you're an asshole, or you're the guy doing it, and you become the hero that everyone expects to save the frickin' day all the frickin'
every
time.
Every single time.
Yeah.
I agree with that. We were just totally talking about that.
Yeah.
So. Well, I'm not producing any new content for you guys, am I?
Well, no. The interesting thing is, because this is our time warp thing, because this episode is going to, we're recording this episode after we recorded the next episode.
Yeah. Wow. This one runs first, and then the one we recorded earlier runs later.
Totally appropriate for me, as one of my hobbies is I have a time travel podcast.
Yes.
Exactly. Like that. And I'd actually love to find out how you got started doing that, why you decided to do it, how it's working out for you.
There's a short version and a longer version.
We got 30 minutes to kill.
We'll go to medium version. The short version is basically, I love Doctor Who. I love time travel. The realization at some point is like, that's probably my favorite type of sci-fi, because it's probably the most, I hate to use the word intelligent, but it's the one that, like, it's like a really good time travel story.
But it's also the one that pushes the reset button.
Right.
It's the jump the shark of sci-fi.
Well, a lot of the time. If done wrong, totally.
If done wrong, yeah.
Like, for example, all of Star Trek Voyager.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Yeah, that show was the worst for that. But a good example is, I mean, I love Back to the Future, because you actually, if you do the math and everything, like, it's like, oh, it works. Especially Back to the Future 2, when you're like, when he starts playing back on his own timeline.
Yeah.
I also hold up a Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
My favorite. That is a great movie. I love that movie.
Like, the moment when they realize, like, wait a minute, what if we totally dropped that over here? And you're like, oh, that's really great.
No, yeah. It's like, okay, dude, we got to remember that. It happened. We totally remembered it.
It's really cool, and particularly with Doctor Who, a really well written episode of Doctor Who, which is not to say like every episode has been great.
Yeah,
especially in New Who. You know, I mean, like especially old Who, but and then with New Who, people heralded like Matt Smith's the best and blah blah. I love the guy.
I don't.
Oh, who's your doctor?
My doctor is Tom Baker, but
you are an old go.
Dude, I told you. Tom Baker was my boy. I love K-9, you know, back in the day. There's something about Matt Smith that just turns me off, but I love Stephen Moffat more than life itself.
Really?
I am a huge Stephen Moffat fan. Coupling was one of the best shows ever written, I thought. The dialogue in that show, just it was spot on. And so I was so excited for him to take over Who. And I was so bummed when it was Matt Smith that was
his
doctor.
I think actually I like Matt Smith. I keep, though, bouncing between Eccleston, who I love because he was so different than everybody.
Yes.
And Tennant. Only because when I watch David Tennant's performance, it's like, wow. Guy knows how to act his heart out. Given the material, sometimes the material he was given was utter crap. Like, let's face it. You know, there's some episodes where it's like, but he's like, he feels it. He's projecting it. You can tell he's loving what he's doing. Matt Smith, I think, he's carrying a lot of weak episodes. Like, I feel like his performance is excellent and good. I think, though, that he wants out. I'm getting that sense for sense from him.
Yeah, Tennant's my second. Yeah. You know, it's really a toss-up between Baker and Tennant, because I see them as kind of different, because it's such a different show from what it was before.
And, it's very different. In every, moment, people are like, oh, is this a two-parter? Shocker. I'm like, let me take you back to Old Who, where, two-parter was really, only a two-parter? What are you talking about?
Okay, so I didn't mean to derail the your podcast, talking about your podcast. Well, now you got there, but I just...
Well, basically...
I got Dr. Who'd.
I got... Basically, the reason we started it, me and my partner in that project, Liz Shannon Miller, Liz is an excellent journalist and writer in her own right for both web video content, which I've been producing previously, and she does a bunch of stage plays and looking to make her own content as well. She actually has a wonderful Tumblr called Liz Tells Frank, where it just started in college, where she had a friend called Frank that, he's like, should I watch this, or can you just give me the summary of what it's about? And it's this hilarious where she's telling you what actually happened in the show, like Castle. But of course, she's making these snide remarks and giving people cute nicknames that are totally hilarious. And she actually has a book on Amazon for it. And so we just turned out to be massive Doctor Who fans in our own right. So we said, let's have a podcast, because every time we talk together, I'm presuming this is how this show started, where you're like, we should record ourselves. We're freaking hilarious. Let's put this camera in front of us here. Let's start talking. That's exactly that's what happened. The longer version, of course, is how I got into web video and all that kind of stuff, and my love for writing and genre in general. That came about just at some point where, I was on the track of I don't know, in my head I was always going to be like, oh, totally work up the corporate rat ladder, totally do everything as a coder. And along the way, I met this wonderful woman named Casey McKinnon. And we started dating, and then I introduced her to the world of blogging and RSS feeds. And at one point, I was talking about audio podcasts, and she actually said to me, can you do that with video? And I sort of did lean back and suppose so. Yeah. RSS media.
Something that guys never thought about. Yeah. And all of a sudden, really cute chicks. Yeah, what if there were a video?
Yeah, exactly. Can I put a picture of myself on the internet? And I guess so. And that's when I first hacked WordPress. And learn to hate PHP.
I would separate the two, because
At this point, I'm really like,
PHP
like,
and WordPress is not the same thing.
Yeah, exactly. Where at some point you realize, wow, WordPress, you're really just throwing shit on the wall, aren't you? There, and that's literally what happened when I rolled my own kind of hack that did RSS feeds, a video RSS feed. It was a combination of reading some stuff on Warren Ellis and RSS in general and that's when she and I started making our shows together.
Right.
I found myself in this wonderful community, and it would kind of reawaken something that I loved when I was going to high school. I would write fiction stories like every week. I would write some crazy stuff, and people would see here's the fun. When the writing assignment came in, at the end of the year, every year was part of the exam was your essay topic and then the creative assignment. And my creative assignment was I'm going to make a freaking screenplay, because I was beyond everybody when it came to that level of creativity. Which
poems, pshaw.
Yeah, I'd have stage plays with taking place in heaven and hell and epics like that. And so from there, we formed. Actually, she first started out doing sex news in Montreal video podcast called Kit Cast, which she probably, if she's listening on this, will hate me for what I'm talking about.
Hi, Casey.
Yeah. But that went the way of the dodo. After a while, we're we like sex with each other. But at
we
some
don't
point,
need to put it out there for everyone.
Well, it was not something that we record ourselves. We actually were literally just reporting news in the sex industry and interviewing people in Montreal, which has a thriving
surprisingly so for Canada. That is the epicenter of the sex industry.
It is the epicenter, and of, I think it's still number one of the web. It's the web app epicenter.
Right.
I would just like to take a moment to say every geek over the age of 30 has worked in the sex industry at some point.
I have not.
Wow.
Never happens. Not once. I just disproved your theory in 1 second.
You just blew my stat, you asshole.
I know. It's supposed to be, but sorry.
You're never getting into groundlings.
Never worked once. Never got a single paycheck. I know. I suck at improv, but just had to disprove that. I never did a sex job. Not once.
Well,
you could have at least done I've worked for a lot of whores. I'm in the music industry.
That kind of qualifies.
Yes. Yeah, somebody's getting fucked.
Well, that's true of all industry.
Yes.
And going back to young coders taking advantage of by working late nights. But from there, we just sort of went, oh, okay, well, what do we want to do? It's like, well, why don't we do a sci-fi show? And the first attempt was this, like, this night, like, we first came up with the name, which is Galacticast. Mm-hmm. You know, people say, like, oh, because it was about Battlestar Galactica. And we're like, no, just the word Galactic and AST, booyah.
Yeah.
You know?
Score, profit.
Yeah, exactly. And we had this naive idea, which is particularly funny given the whole, like, where YouTube is these days, of like, let's have a channel of shows. Just the two of us.
We'll create a network.
Yeah. And so the original version of Galacticast was like, we had a comic book orange, which was a comic book review show. We would have world news, but it was all sci-fi news in reality. I think we had like a kind of mystery science theater show. We had like all this stuff planned out. And within 2 weeks, like we had a break, like we broke down. We had a complete meltdown.
Right.
And we're like, we're not having fun with this. What the fuck are we doing? Why is this not fun? Because, you know, the reason we stopped doing the stupid sex one was that it wasn't fun. This was less fun than that. Right. And then we're like, but the only thing we're having fun with was the sketches. And that was the only one everyone seemed to like, was when we were doing these comedy sketches. You guys have seen it, where all we did is like get a cheap green screen, toss ourselves in there, terrible effects. But we're having the time of our lives when we're doing that. Every other show was pulling teeth.
Right.
Painful.
Oh.
And so we're like, well, let's just do the sketches. And that's all Galacticast became for like 2-3 years. And at its height, it was like this, again, like part of that reawakening of my creative side that I keep trying to stoke the flames, which is, mm-hmm. You know, there's something validating when you do have a bunch of people come up to you regularly and say, dude, that when you did that thing, that was awesome.
I saw that. That was great.
Yeah. You know, and like
it's such a good feeling.
It's a good thing. Yeah. And whether it happens with code or mm-hmm. or with creative pieces, and I actually believe coding is a creative piece.
Absolutely.
I agree. You know, it's that validation of, hey, you're not coding in a shell. Mm-hmm. And again, tips for older guys who are like, I'm a Java programmer, I only work corporate gigs and I don't believe in open source. Like, put yourself out there by doing open source coding, because that is your creative exercise and people will embrace you. And there'll be haters, but there's gonna be haters for no matter what you put out.
Yeah, doesn't matter.
Yeah,
what
seriously
you do. Anytime you open your mouth in public, there's gonna be a hater.
There's gonna be haters, and these days maybe more so, only because people are idiots,
because it's easy. And yeah, it's so easy. And right, it's anonymous.
Exactly.
And they can hide behind
things. I'm actually finding these days anonymity is no longer,
it's starting to go away, because people don't realize that you use the same name on every social network.
Right.
So when I look up your handle on Facebook, there you come.
Right.
So
and I also feel, this is me being a grumpy old man, where like, I feel people, there's a generation of people brought up like, okay, you have a choice of being nice, or you can get some more attention to yourself if you be a complete asshole.
Yeah.
And like, I'll be an asshole. And you know, that choice of trolling versus, you know, how about we have a conversation? But anyway, having that validation was really good. It made me start realizing that some security stuff I've been doing in my life, like, of course I have to climb the corporate ladder. Even all this time I was doing Galacticast, I was still climbing the corporate ladder.
You're still working a full-time gig.
I was doing a full-time gig. And that, again, that's the young man's game.
Yeah.
That's the young man's game. It's like, but and for me, it was like, I was at a startup, which got bought out. And all in the meantime, I was doing this video show. And I did not have one South by Southwest. It just came down to, like, I was like, I hate my job.
Right.
But I don't want to give up coding. What are my choices? And I want to move to Los Angeles. Because, you know, if something happens in my writing, that's the place to be.
This is where you got to be.
And then suddenly to some guy there, he's like, dude, you're a coder. You can get a job anywhere. I'm like, and for some reason, I was like, no, I can't. I can only get a job. It's a struggle to find jobs for coding. He's like, no, it's not. You can find a job. Girls is before the everyone wants to hire the Facebook guy to code their next great app.
Yeah.
But that's when I took the job with Carbon 5, because he said, I'll put you in contact with this awesome guy in Los Angeles, who was one of the founders of Carbon 5, and had a quick interview, Eddie's like, totally, you seem like the right fit. Let's move you over, and haven't looked back since. Pretty amazing. Now Galacticast has stopped. It came to a point where, you know, there was a number of factors that went to it. Casey and I went through a rough time together, and when we got back together, part of that rough time was like we were spending a lot. Like the characters that we were on the show became our real life characters. And we weren't being attractive to each other. Because on the show, if you watch the episode, she's kind of like this harpy that's right. trying to become famous. And I'm a complete idiot, you know, and is completely fucking up all the time. And we were like, we need time to get back to our normal selves, to reset.
Right.
But then when we tried to get back into it, we actually had a couple like meetings and stuff. And one of the guys we talked to, Fred Siebert, who does Frederator, I think that from his studio came out Adventure Time and before that. Ooh. Cool. Was another number of things. He was like awesome. Like in some ways, people say like, "Well, he totally killed your creative spirit." I'm like, "No, he did not." He told me like, "Be a better writer," because literally, he was like, "You are." He's like, "You are super creative, super fun. I love watching your shit, but it's all parody. And if you really got to make it, you got to come up with some original ideas."
I find that to be one of the problems with this whole new paradigm, which mm-hmm. is anybody can throw anything up now.
Right.
There's no editing system. We're not running things past anybody anymore, which is kind of fine for a podcast.
Right.
Whatever. I mean, this is the medium. It's just free form. Throw it out there. Just talk. But I definitely see that happening with you know, all the YouTube channels that are coming up. Nobody has an editor anymore.
Right.
And I think that's an important part of the process. And that's kind of something, you know, you guys were just doing stuff and it was great,
mm-hmm.
but you were never getting any feedback to push you further.
Right. Well, the feedback was, you're doing great.
Yeah. The feedback is, it's awesome.
And then we were getting...
Because no friend is going to tell you it sucks.
Well, no. Because, I mean, like, or, that's the thing. We're when you're getting, like, not just people telling you great, but at its height, we were getting, like, 1 million views per month.
Yeah, which is
and
astounding.
It's, and it's, yeah. like, because, yeah. mind you, we're, like, this is before YouTube was big. Casey and I still laugh at, like, we went to a video con. I can't remember what the name of it was, but we went to this one of the early video conferences of us bloggers, and it was like, you know, Zadie and Steve from Smash Face, they were doing Jet Set Show and all that.
Yeah.
It was like early days, we were pioneers. Everyone was referring to us as pioneers and so on. And this guy from YouTube showed up, and it might have been Chen, and he's like, "Hey guys, I just listening in, and like, you know, if you want, you can use my little network." And Casey and I scoffed at it because we were like, "You can only do 3 minutes of video." Like, at the time, that was all you could. Yeah. And like, our sketches can be up to 20. Our epics. Flash forward to now, and look where everyone is. You know, yeah. But and someone recently asked me at like a conference I went to, like, "Do you have regrets? Don't you think if you'd stay in the game, you'd be like so big? Don't you regret it?" I'm like, "No, I don't." Because on the one hand, I was a young guy killing himself and not happy.
Yeah.
You know, I met a lot of awesome people. I mean, I would not know Jason if I did not get involved with all that stuff. We met through Sean Bonner and you know, and just would there not be any contacts in that fashion,
right?
Yep.
And so I can't regret all the friendships it's brought me, and at the same time, it's time to move on and come up with new creative endeavors, and not like you said, like you can keep throwing stuff up,
yeah.
And I see a lot of that, and you can keep like doing parodies, like, oh, now we're doing parodies of parodies. I mean, like, what is the Harlem Shake? If you think,
oh about Jesus,
it? You know, it's funny. But then
once,
it's funny the first time.
Yeah.
But at the same time, but it's like not their piece of music; it's someone else's piece of music.
You're recycling and you're rehashing and you're remixing, but none of it's original.
And I totally embrace that culture. I mean, like, I totally
which is cool. Yeah, it's fine, but it is what it is.
Yeah.
It's not groundbreaking. It's not.
And I'm interested in making art. Star Wars. That's the thing. Yeah. It's like I'm interested in saying, you know what? I love world building. I love sitting in there. So mentally, I've been doing a few. Like in my own creative endeavors now, I've been like coming up with worlds and pitches and screenplays. And my biggest problem I've encountered is every time I go out to try to sell it for somebody in a web series, I was like, "Oh, this is going to be my next web series." And the first thing is like, "This is kind of expensive."
Web series means $500 an episode.
Yeah. Well, I began one with like a giant, like a, I have like a steampunk adventure.
Nice.
And I was like, it began with like an airship duel. And I'm like, and like, you know, for me, it's again, like, that's, and here's the thing, the young man is still inside of me, because I'm like, I totally can do that because I know how to do it technically, based on all my experience with Galacticast and other stuff. I'm like, I can totally do this. you know, and then, but you show it to somebody else, they're like, no, it sounds expensive. And so last year I sold my first screenplay, but which was at the end, like it was at the tail end of, okay, that's how Hollywood works. Like thing where the first thing I sent, like me and my writing partner sent this to this guy, this, that they had heard we're making a short film, which came out last year. It was called DNE. And it surprised us. It actually won like best sci-fi at Dragon Con for a short film. But while we're still shooting it, the studio, who shall remain nameless so they will not sue my ass, they totally sent, they were like, we sent the, he was friends with my writing partner, one of the guys there. He's like, are you doing a short film? We want to start supporting short films. Because, like, meaning that they want to basically toss some money at it and get the distribution rights to put on the
website.
Yeah, make
sure that they lock you down in case it's really, really good.
Yeah.
But we'll just give you a little bit of cash.
So, and we're like, whatever, because we were, like, budgeting this short film. And, like, we already put our money into it. So any money back is awesome. And so we send them the screenplay. And they came back and they're like, and they're like, oh, well, you're already in production with this? And we're like, oh, yeah, you knew that. And like, yeah, well, maybe you can sign to something else, which... My friend was like, he was like, oh, that totally means that they love your writing and they really wish they could own it. But since they can't, they're not going to give you any money for it. So then we said, but why don't you guys send us something? So we sent over one of our, again, epics that we've written. And they're like, first the response, this sounds expensive. Love your writing. Sounds expensive. Can you lower the cost? What followed was two or three iterations. We just kept cutting things out of this idea because they loved the idea and they loved our writing.
Maybe you could write a four-camera family sitcom.
No, the funny thing is...
Because we could shoot that pretty cheap.
It was a four-family sitcom with special effects, but the whole idea was like a sci-fi sitcom was basically like kind of thing. Eventually, it became down to like one guy in front of a camera because they were like, this is them trying to get into web series. This movie studio.
One guy said,
wait,
in front of a camera,
and sit him in front of a camera, right?
Yeah, right.
That's cool.
So, but the thing is, that's what we finally did. Like, we said, like, what if, because the whole thing revolves around a scientist, and they were like, we've said, like, well, what if it's his experiment journal? Like, he's recording himself doing these experiments. So we said, like, okay, it's one effect per episode because we still wanted to have, like, that sci-fi element, but it's really like, scientist tries an experiment, goes horribly wrong, comedy ensues. One joke under a minute, cut it down to bare bones. What they came back with the response was like, oh, you guys write found footage? So for them means, so this is suddenly found footage, and we're like, my writing partner, smart guy, Nara Williams, he's like, yes. I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, just say yes. Like, yes, we write found footage. They're like, oh, can you write us a found footage movie? Which means horror movie. They basically want every found footage movie is Paranormal Activity.
Yes.
That's all they want. Yeah. So we came up with this Paranormal Activity storyline, and
shoot it in green.
And this is the lesson. Like, we did it, and they're like, they paid us. It was all like, it was, that was our first screenplay sale, and I was like, okay, that's how Hollywood works. It is about like just cut it down to the bare bones. The horror movie, they totally wanted to give us more money than any web series idea because like now it's a movie. The silos that people put themselves in, and.
But that, wasn't the promise of YouTube and all these sorts of things is that we would break out of that system?
But
and we briefly did.
We briefly
but then
did.
We all find ourselves being sucked back in, which is my argument about Kickstarter, which was that was going to be all of us as amateurs getting money to do stuff, and now the Hollywood system is moving in and taking it over.
I'll say this about the Hollywood system so far that is taking it over. It is the actors and the creators themselves, which is different than if a studio comes in and does it.
But the studios aren't still tied to those properties.
They are looking at them, and that's the one thing I would love to have some clear answers in the case of, like, the name is Veronica Mars.
Veronica Mars,
which is like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
You know, who's doing what? But, like, what's his name? Zach Braff is doing his own movie, and that's his original concept.
Right now. But then there might be a distribution partner that comes in and it gets a little weird.
But I'm hoping that they'll become a bunch of George Lucas's where distribution partner gets squat all except the ticket sales rights.
That would be fantastic.
And they own those properties. And I think that's a better...
Judging from history and my own particular industry, the music industry, I remember Pearl Jam taking on Ticketmaster. Didn't go well.
Oh, I can totally understand what you say. Now I feel old. Yeah. I still think...
But I want to believe, to quote more sci-fi.
It is
David Duchovny from The X-Files.
Right.
Well, actually, just a poster, not David Duchovny.
Oh, just a poster. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. Sorry.
Get out! but the thing is, I completely agree with that. And one thing I've been in the web community still talking about, though I've kind of raised my hand, at least with some of the web video stuff, is... why are we having gatekeepers? Like, some people feel, a lot of entertainers feel like, if I show my, if I pitch the right person, they will approve my show and I'll get the money.
Yeah.
And I've been there too. I went through that thinking process for, as I said, the last few years. So I'm like, if I write the right pitch, if I write the right screenplay, if I convince the right person, they'll let me make my movie or they'll let me make my web series.
Right.
And then it's realized, the things I realize is not everything has to be a web series, despite that's where my last success was. And number two is, I never needed a gatekeeper when I did Galacticast.
You just did it.
I just did it.
Yeah.
And that is the young man thing that I think an old guy can still do.
Yeah.
And the one thing we do have to do is preserve the space. So, like, I was so happy when we did the SOPA stuff, you know, when that came about. And we all said, let's stand up and fight against that, because it was wrong.
Yeah.
I'm kind of surprised that we all slept at the wheel with the CISPA.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah, that's,
we just passed another.
Well, the big difference with that is Google was behind SOPA, behind the stopping SOPA, but they're not behind CISPA.
Right. And
so,
and,
you know, you lose, you know, the 800-pound gorilla in the room.
Yeah, and that's the thing that we have to do from the ground up to get, like, coders in Google to be excited about it. They bring it up to their heads and so forth. That's the thing that we still need to fight on, because I find that the younger generation, they don't get that. Especially the younger generation of YouTubers and stuff who are like, because they're not coming in from a coder. Like, we're coming in as, like, when I was doing YouTube stuff, not YouTube, the video, web video stuff, I came in as a coder who rediscovered his creative self, but I had the strength of, like, oh, I could totally hack together my own video RSS feed.
Yeah.
But I guess I'm looking at it from a really depressing perspective, which is, when we all got started with this stuff, it was all open and cool. And I just see all of this stuff being taken over by the major corporate interests already.
Totally.
I think it's all gone already. I think it's gone.
I do not believe that.
I want to believe that.
I guess for me, it's like, I believe that it's still possible for anyone to put something out there. And if they're clever enough to get the people to watch it, because that's,
and maybe some AT&T will hire them to do a commercial.
That
seems to be where everything's going now. And if you make a clever YouTube video that catches virally, you'll get hired by a corporation to make a commercial.
And that's the thing that I think, like, the whole catch virally thing is like, I'm going to make a viral video, and like, you're already lost again.
Yeah, you're done.
It's ridiculous. Yeah. I can't take a bike ride down Venice Beach. Everybody's got their cameras and they're shooting themselves doing stupid shit.
Right.
That's all people do anymore is try to make viral videos.
And I mean, like, that's like, they kind of missed the point of, like, part of the viral is it's viral. Yeah. It happens by chance.
Look up the definition.
I'm sure you can help align things in your favor, but so far things are viral. Like, I think the only thing that's consistently viral is, like, have a famous person do something stupid as a comedy sketch. I mean, that's entire Funny or Die, and that's why they're viral, because people goes, I recognize Will Ferrell. He's a cool guy. You know, that's what brings them in. And that, to your point of the Kickstarter, like, I'm going to be like, the one thing I think is apart from tech products, for most of the video stuff is, hey, we have famous person X in our video project. Totally give us money. Let's raise the bar there. But you might hate me for giving this example, but 50 Shades of Grey. As much as that's a terrible, terrible story.
I'm into anything that gets women horny.
Okay. I had an interesting conversation, like half post commenting about a fetish. There's a crucifixion fetish out there.
Oh my god!
And I was like,
oh my god!
Yeah. And
by the way, that's what it's called. Oh my god! Fetish.
I was like, Davey, I'm gonna nail you. I'm really gonna nail you.
Oh, that's good. But that's some gold right there.
Yeah. But that's like there is always something out there for people to do. The gatekeepers, previously gatekeepers were real.
Yeah.
I feel like the emperor has no clothes with the gatekeepers now.
Well, why you're seeing the panic of people running towards Kickstarters, especially the major corporations.
Right, because they're like, shit, we don't have any clothes.
We don't know what works anymore. Throw money at us, and then whatever you guys want, we'll make.
Right. And all it takes is for some... Like, there is a point where you do, I put in quotes, sell out. But how you choose to sell out can, like, if someone says, I totally want you to make my AT&T commercial. I'm like, well, I don't want to make your AT&T commercial. I totally want to make Star Wars. And I don't mean a Star Wars parody. I totally want us to all be little George Lucas. It's like, I built this world. So, again, 50 Shades of Grey, someone totally built a world. A crappy world, but it was their own, and they got it out there.
Well, that's fair. I mean, same thing with whatever Twilight. The Kay Stewart thing was. Twilight. Yeah.
Yeah. Twilight and we're going with books as an example, but the same.
Well, we can even go with True Blood, which was just some crazy Southern older woman who wrote all those books, and then it became this great miniseries.
And so some people might take the lesson, because I'm trying to write a novel right now, and they're taking the lesson like, oh, it's the secrets, write books. I'm like, no, smack up you upside the head. It's not write books. It's write an interesting world that people can live in. Because down the line, I see us doing, especially with all this Oculus Rift thing, we're building worlds. We're building playgrounds for each of us to play in. Yeah. That's all Star Wars is at this point. It's a giant playground where ideas of one guy have evolved to all kinds of freaking rides, whether it's apps or other books or movies.
Well, it always comes down to create an interesting idea.
Right.
And hopefully it'll find its way out there somewhere.
Yep.
Misa, I think you're right.
Oh, Jesus.
Now I want to punch you. I rewatched that recently.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I've never gone back to rewatch this.
So that's the thing. I never gone back. I'm like, is it as bad as I remember?
It's worse.
And I was like, it is? But with the exception of episode 3. Episode 3 was the one that they said, like, I was like...
When Darth Vader came up and the thing went... everything in the room crunched around him, that was horrible.
That's the thing, is that there's a few moments in there that make you really angry.
Yeah.
Unlike the first two, which is there's no redeeming qualities
whatsoever.
You know, I think the number, like, I used to think...
And then midichlorians, what the fuck are those?
Right. Midichlorians, what the hell?
And his sensor is a Gillette razor.
Yeah. Whereas, and I used to think, like, episode two was better than one because there's less Jar Jar. It's like, no, it actually makes far less sense. Episode one kind of makes... No, it doesn't.
No.
But at least there's that awesome lightsaber fight at the end. Episode two, no sense. But have you heard about the machete order of watching Star Wars?
I've heard of it, but
it's like watch episode because people are like now our generation talk about older generation having younger generations. How are we going to introduce our kids to Star Wars?
Yeah, you can't show them 1, 2, 3 because then they know.
No, you have to start with the beginning,
right? And then you're like, this is.
But those are bad,
right?
That's like I tried to get my girlfriend at the time into Battlestar Galactica, the redone one,
right?
The miniseries, boring as hell. Once it actually got into the series, it was awesome,
right?
But sitting through that first 2-hour miniseries. She fell asleep.
Yeah, it can be painful.
But once I got her past that, she was way into it.
And so with the prequels, even worse though, because they ruin
it's spoilers.
Yeah, it ruins episode 5, right? Like the best moment is like when Vader says, "I'm your father," which we make fun of now, but it's like, no, that was
pivotal.
That was
I was like 15 at the time. I was like, what?
And so like the episode, the proper order to watch Star Wars, that according to the machete order, is you watch 4, you watch 5.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, with your father, then you flash back to 1, 2, 3.
For Return
of the Jedi. And then you do Return of the Jedi, where it all comes together.
Actually, Jar Jar softens you up for the Ewoks.
Yeah.
That's true.
He's like, you thought he was annoying.
Yeah.
But the best thing is, like, I came to the point where, like, then some people say, like, oh, even better machete orders, drop 1 altogether. So it's 4, 5, 2, 3, 6. And now, after watching through everything, like, fuck it.
Just 3.
It's like 4, 5, 3, because literally in episode 4, it's like, your father was a pilot, and then later, I am your father. That's what you get in 4 and 5, the 2 main points.
Yeah.
Guess what happens at the beginning of episode 3? Obi-Wan and Anakin are fighter pilots, like, blasting through stuff, and then they're Jedi. And you're like, totally, let's pick up, like, that's all we need.
That's it. Just
everything else
it.
Is just shit, you know? They review everything, and the story actually makes sense in 3. But has these terrible moments of, like, I'm on the higher ground and flips out and stuff like
that. Well, given that we're about to get a new Star Wars movie every year for the next couple of years, we're going to have to revisit this topic.
Yes. I mean, I actually was excited about the J.J. Abrams casting, hiring for the director.
Yeah.
Like, people are like, oh, his Star Trek. Like, I know some old Trekkies are upset about it. I'm like...
He did a complete reboot. That's fine. I just don't like one man in charge of 2 of my favorite childhood sci-fi things.
You know he's totally going to get fired from the Trek franchise. Oh, yeah. And the fact is... Let's face it. He made the Star Wars Star Trek. Like punch it, Mr. Sulu, and you know, all that stuff. Yeah. He needs to be in Star Trek. He wants to. In Star Wars. He wants to be in Star
Wars. That's where he should be.
Yeah.
I hope he stays with Star Trek though, just because.
Yep.
Find some good directors. He rebooted the thing. You find some good writers, some good directors. Star Trek's still got some legs. They can do some cool stuff with that.
Simon Pegg as Scotty still is the best casting.
The casting was amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, the casting all around is everything. Fantastic.
I mean, there's 2 things that's possibly going to happen. They're going to either let him produce the 3rd one.
Yeah, he'll produce. He won't write the third one.
Yeah, and that's it, because that'll be the end of that Trek series. Or they'll hand it off, and hopefully they'll do something like Bond, because, I mean, the last couple Bonds have been...
Not bad.
Like, even Quantum Solace, where people say it's bad, like, yeah, but I can take you back to some Pierce Brosnan ones.
Roger Moore ones.
Yeah.
Come on.
Exactly.
Yeah. All of the Roger Moore ones. And he was the Bond I grew up with.
Right.
And I like Timothy Dalton, but I'm the only one, apparently, but I thought he was good.
Timothy Dalton is the one you should watch when you're older, and then it makes complete sense. But yeah. when you're a young guy...
Yeah, because like, that was the midlife crisis Spawn.
Right, exactly.
That's what that show was. Yeah,
perfect. That's exactly what he was.
Yep. Yeah.
You're like, oh, I've been doing this since the
60s. I'm so tired.
Yeah.
I'm a grumpy old spy.
But I gotta say, Quantum of Solace, I actually liked better than Casino Royale.
Really?
In some parts. Yeah. I think I can go back... Maybe it's because I've seen Casino Royale so many times that I can still watch Quantum of Solace, but it's I liked it. I liked it a lot.
I liked it, and I think people who I don't think it's as good as Casino Royale, but I liked it.
All right,
I agree with that too.
Well, Rudy, thank you for coming by, man. It's been fucking awesome.
We're all over the place, and there's so many more things I want to talk to you about.
I know.
We can sci-fi geek out all night.
If you want to bring me back, I am more than welcome. This has been awesome talking with you guys.
All right,
as
man.
I said, like I love the show. I was telling Jason, it's like having my friends talk to me in my ear while I work. I'm like, I gotta have my coding. I'm doing coding stuff. And...
Well, by all means, please pimp your stuff. Whatever you want to pimp.
Let's see. Basically, if you want to contact me about anything geeky, you can find me at, like, my central hub is Twitter. I'm Rudy on Twitter. I was there at the South By when they launched, so I'm like, okay, I'll totally grab that name.
What's that number of yours that you always say about Twitter?
Oh, the 140, the original 140?
Were you one of the 140?
I don't think I was.
Okay.
But you're early to get just at Rudy.
Well, it was one of those things where I actually had my full name, and I'm like, wait a minute, am I the first Rudy on here?
And you could have probably gotten R back at that point.
Yeah, you know what's caused that thinking was Tontek.
Yep, he got T.
He got T, and I was like, I don't want to be called at R, which I actually regret now, because I'm like, given the number of people in Indonesia who message me thinking I am their Rudy.
Wow. There's apparently some famous JPD in Indonesia, so I get all of these ad messages.
Weird. Why is it
on,
Indonesia?
I don't on Instagram, everybody's like,
they
at
all
JPD,
live on their
they love you.
24/7.
Imagine they're actually doing it to us. They're like totally, we have this huge fan base out there that we're just not aware of.
We'll take your Deutsche Markies. Sorry, there's a reference there.
And my friend has MJ.
MJ, yes.
Michael Jackson. When Michael Jackson died, she's like, Twitter's fucking useless for me now. It's like just fucking useless.
Yeah, I hear you. Nowhere near that bad for stuff, but like when Rudy Currents gets, anytime someone likes his YouTube video, I get pinged with it. It's only weird stuff, but that's usually where I like interacting with people. I love interacting with people. You can look at the archives of Galacticast if you happen to want to catch that show. I love coding. You can see stuff on GitHub underneath Rudy Chan. And as I said, these days, keep an eye out for later this year. My novel will be out, and I have a beer app, hopefully, in the next month that I'm going to put out.
Really?
Yeah.
We need to talk off the air.
Okay, well, yeah. Well, when your novel comes out, we hope you come back on, and we can totally talk about it.
I'll actually tell you off this chat what it's about. You can tell me if you really want me to come back on.
Okay.
What it is.
I'm thinking we'll watch it.
50
Shades of Code.
Yeah, exactly.
Or 50 Shades of Jargo.
Let's call it. All right, man. Talk to you later.
Bye, all.
Okay, last one to kill a bad guy buys the beer.
We're driving to Florida.